Welcome to Crab Takes and Football. This is what the Baltimore Sports Report does. This is episode 6 of week 6. I am TK, joined by Andrew Holly. Holly, how are you, man?
I'm pretty good, TK. It would be hard to be in a bad mood after yesterday's performance. What a game.
Yeah, that was awesome. I mean, got some chill in the air up here in New York. You know, the fall weather, the football weather, and I mean, speaking of the weather, if we can get the Ravens to play in rain every week, you know, we'll be sitting pretty.
Yeah, that is the key to fantastic Ravens performances. I didn't even think about that, but it needs to rain, you know, and no matter what happens, where's the Super Bowl this year? Is it a dome or is it an outdoor facility? Do we know? Where is the Super Bowl this year?
That's a good question.
If only there was a way for me to look that up. So while you talk about the Ravens a little bit more, I'm going to figure out where the Super Bowl is.
All right.
So we can see if we'll be playing in potential rain as we win this year.
All right. Yeah, let me know when you have that. So the Ravens had a dominant performance yesterday, beat the Titans in Nashville 21-0. Defense pitches a shutout, sets a franchise record of sacks. The offense was firing at different times on, you know, different kind of cylinders, but they look good overall. So we'll talk about both of those. We'll talk about the special teams. We'll hand out a game ball. We'll talk about our pop of the week. We will put somebody on notice with some bulletin board material. We actually had friend of the program, Mike Long, in Nashville to take in the game. So we'll go out and we'll talk to him. And of course, we will look forward to week 7 as the Ravens finally get back home to face a pretty good New Orleans Saints team. So, the Ravens.
Well, reporting back in real quick, okay. TK. So, we won't be able to play the Super Bowl in the rain this year because it's in Atlanta. And, of course, they've got their new retractable roof dome there. So, unfortunately, we won't be able to win the Super Bowl in the rain. So, we'll just have to take that thought and maybe the AFC Championship game.
All right. Maybe if it's just really humid in the stadium or something, that might do it.
Oh, good call. It is Atlanta.
Yeah, no, we'll try to make that happen. I'll make some calls. Ravens defer. I love when they do that. They put the defense on the field first. I love that. But we're talking about the offense right now. And they were pinned inside the 10-yard line to start the game. And they put together one of the most impressive drives of the year.
Kudos. The first of many kudos, I guess I should really say, for Michael Crabtree. That was the Michael Crabtree drive.
Yeah.
To open the game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, don't seem to be any kind of trust issues after the drops. You know, Flacco was looking right to him. You know, first play from scrimmage, 21 yards down the field on the left side.
Boom.
Flacco zings it over to him, and he brings it down, and, you know, that kind of just set the tone.
It truly did. It truly did.
Continuing with that drive, you know, the Ravens did show a little bit more commitment to the run. You know, had Alex Collins working early on. You know, I have been asking for that commitment. I guess I should be happy with that, but there's still a glaring problem in the efficiency of the run game. You know, the yards per carry still aren't there, but I think just the threat of running the ball adds another dimension to the offense. You know, Collins did have the nice rushing, or two nice rushing touchdowns. So there was some success there, but, you know, he's averaging less than 3 yards a carry yesterday. You know, Gus Edwards, who I know you're going to talk about later, he looked pretty good. You know, maybe he earned himself some more snaps, but I think there's still some progress and improvement to be made on the ground.
Yeah, that is definitely still the big question mark on offense is when are the Ravens going to be able to run the ball effectively when they need to? I mean, they, you know, certainly they've had some moments. You know, Buck Allen's had some nice third down runs. You know, they've been able, and it's not to say they haven't been able to convert, but there certainly is the consistency of their run game is lacking. I mean, you look at their overall numbers. Sure, they ran the ball 35 times yesterday. Mm-hmm. 3.5 yard average. It was only 123 yards overall. But then you take out, okay, Lamar Jackson had his 1 yard, one carry for 22 yards. Yeah. So that puts us at 34 carries for 101 yards, that's pretty terrible. You know, I think, and we'll talk about him a little more as the game goes on, or the show goes on, as you mentioned. But Gus Edwards, I'll tell you what, I mean, look, this isn't to take our offensive line off the hook, because they certainly have to play better. But when you see Gus Edwards, who was one of the guys in training camp, and not really training camp, but in preseason games, it's not like I went to training camp, but when I'd watch him on the preseason games, he was a guy that stuck out to me. Specifically was Gus Edwards. Mm-hmm. And when we re-signed him, and he's showed yesterday, he's got some skills. Not to say that he's going to be Mr. Breakout Amazing Running Back, but he might be what this offense is somehow missing. Maybe it's an extra little shiftiness that, you know, Alex Collins doesn't necessarily have. You know, he and Buck Allen are both fairly straight-ahead runners, I guess, and maybe, I don't know enough about Gus Edwards, but maybe he has a little bit of that, you know, shiftiness. Ray Rice, hey, I went to Rutgers, you know, and maybe he can make some plays.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think we also do have to credit the Titans' defense a little bit. You know, Jarrell Casey is a beast. They just seemed a little bit faster sideline to sideline than the Ravens were, you know, on the stretch runs. Rashawn Evans got his first start, I believe, this week, and, you know, he looks like he's going to be a really good player for them. So, you know, while they were kind of leaky previously in the run game, I think they did do a pretty good job on their end as well. So I do like the commitment. Probably just need a little bit more production there. I really thought Lamar Jackson was going to score. I really wanted him to, but just came up a little bit short there.
Yeah, that's always – it's nice to see, you know, as I think we've mentioned in weeks past, where I'm skeptical of using him a whole lot, I do like using him in the red zone. I mean, that was certainly the area where we were. He almost scored. Hopefully we see a little bit more of that. It's not going to be long till he gets his first touchdown. I think that's pretty clear.
Right, right. He's getting closer and closer each game. You know, it seems like he's having more success in the carries. You know, Ronnie Stanley was kind of escorting him down the field. So maybe the line is getting a little bit more used to running those types of plays. But some of the other running plays that we saw were kind of like a misdirection toss to Collins, you know, a swing pass out to Collins, and the end around to Hayden Hurst. So it looks like they're trying to get a little creative, especially with, you know, once you include those Lamar Jackson runs. So maybe that coaching staff is fairly confident that, you know, we're not going to line up in I formation and just jam it down a defense's throat. You know, maybe we do have to get a little bit more creative with it and try to figure out how to get some yards there. So I keep saying that the identity of the Ravens offense is going to be to run the ball, but, you know, it's not 2006. You know, maybe things have changed a little bit, and that's a little bit outdated thinking. So we'll see. I mean, I guess Flacco has been throwing the ball pretty well, and maybe the run game is the complement these days.
Well, I think, you know, think about the last time we won a Super Bowl. You know, Ray Rice in the playoffs was somewhat neutralized. It was really all about Joe dropping back and slinging it. Mm-hmm. So we may get more of that. That's definitely how the team is built. And you know what? If you're able to – where I worry about not having a strong run game is as we get deep into the season and you've got a defense that is – you know, we'll talk about them in a little bit, but they're record setting right now, mm-hmm. that certainly say this about the offense, they're good enough with this defense to get us to the playoffs.
For sure.
So, you know, but where I worry about – not having that run game is wearing down that defense. Mm-hmm. So you're not able to run out the clock at the end of games. So what the Ravens are going to need to be able to establish is that short passing game that can take the place of the run game. Yeah. So that's where having four tight ends, and that's where having, you know, Willie Snead and Crabtree as the move the chains wide receivers mm-hmm. is going to really be key as the season progresses.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad you mentioned the controlling the clock there, because on just three drives, So the Ravens had one drive of 9 minutes and 9 seconds, another drive of 7 minutes and 20 seconds, and another drive of 7 minutes and 6 seconds. So on three possessions, the Ravens offense was out on the field for, you know, 23 and a half minutes. You know, that is something that really feeds into allowing the defense to play well. Like you said, they just don't get worn down when they're sitting on the sidelines. So that's going to be a major key as well going forward. Like you said, that short passing game kind of taking the place of the between the tackles running game to keep that clock moving. One of the things that we absolutely have to talk about is the unfortunate injury to Alex Lewis. And he had been really coming along the past couple weeks, and he was playing really well again yesterday before his injury. And I think luckily he's back in Baltimore now. He was cleared at the hospital and all that kind of stuff. And I read that he might even play on Sunday. But that was a tough injury. I know we've been talking about mixing up the offensive line. Did you think it was interesting at all that they just plugged Bozeman right in?
I did. I mean, especially because Brown had been in early, I believe, earlier in the game at that point when they were kind of mixing and matching with the different formations. So to see them not move Hurst mid-game over to left guard, to me, tells you how much they value what Hurst is currently doing at right tackle. So I found that interesting. You know, secondarily to that, is that I was reading today, Harbaugh had some pretty decent praise for Bozeman's work at left guard. You know, so I found that very interesting. I mean, you know, I think at some point Bozeman is probably our center of the future, you would imagine. So that would certainly be a good way to break him in at left guard and then slide him over maybe next season and he can have more of a competition with Skura. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I mean, we've talked the last few weeks about moving the offensive line around, doing some reshuffling to help the running game. It looks like we're going to get it, whether we like it or not, I would think, at least for a game.
Yeah. I mean, I was kind of surprised at first, too, that, you know, they didn't have Orlando Brown in. But I guess, you know, having Hurst move over to the left guard, what I equated it to in my mind was moving, like in baseball, from like third base to second base. You know, obviously both infield spots, but the assignments and techniques are vastly different. You know, maybe doing that mid-game after not getting that many practice reps there so far is doable, but probably a little bit more difficult than, you know, Harbaugh and the offensive line coach were willing to risk. So I don't know. I kind of pieced that together into rationalizing putting Bozeman in. And Bozeman, like you said, held his own. You know, it's not like he was a terribly weak link out there. But, you know, at the end of the game, you did see Orlando Brown for a few snaps. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if Lewis is good to go, then I think they probably just go with the status quo and with the same offensive line because, you know, they've played all these games together now already. But if not, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they adjust to that. You know, speaking of coming into the game late, I was kind of surprised and maybe even a little bit disappointed that Lamar Jackson didn't get some more reps later on once the game was in hand.
I don't know. I don't know. I can't get too upset about that. I mean, yeah, the game was in hand, but it wasn't. I mean, I guess it was pretty much a blowout at 21-0. It's hard for me to call three touchdowns a total blowout, but we'd absolutely destroy the Titans. So, yeah, that was a blowout. I don't know. I don't have a problem with that myself. It didn't concern me at all.
It just seemed like, to me, that was an opportunity to get him in at a low-risk time. You know, I think the more snaps that he gets, the better off he's going to be. So I thought that maybe he would get an opportunity, but didn't go that way. So I don't know. We'll see. I think he'll kind of just be that read option gimmick kind of quarterback for the foreseeable future, unless we have another game like we played against the Bills or something like that when we're up by a million. So yeah, just another note that I had. It wouldn't be a Crab Takes in Football episode without me mentioning the Mandrews. He had two more third down conversions yesterday, seems to be playing still a little bit bigger of a role than first-round pick Hayden Hurst in that passing game. So hopefully they can find a little bit more of a balance there, but always glad to see my guy catching the ball.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. You know, I'm just speaking about the tight ends. I found the handing the ball off to Hayden Hurst in a running play was very strange to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't get it. It's one thing if it was like short yardage or, you know, a goal line play and you're just trying to, you know, give the big guy the ball, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. It was just weird. I don't know. I didn't like that play at all.
Yeah, I think it was kind of one of those, like, hoping to catch the Titans sleeping, and, you know, they weren't, so it didn't really work out, but...
Yeah, not my favorite. And, of course, we always have to do that end-around sort of play to Chris Moore. That always tends to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, anyway.
Yeah, anyway. So, I mean, on the offense, you know, if it's not John Brown, it seems to be Willie Snead on the intermediate routes. It seems to be Crabtree that steps up, so... You know, we continue to see how deep of a pass-catching group this is. And, you know, can't give the front office enough credit for adding these guys. You know, they have been such a boon to Flacco. You know, yesterday he didn't put up the biggest numbers, but he made every throw that you could want him to make. So the pass catchers, again, deserve a ton of credit. You know, even though John Brown was relatively quiet compared to his previous games, you know, Crabtree was the one that stepped up this time, and, you know, maybe another time it'll be Willie Snead who is the guy. So, you know, having all those options is such a dimension to this offense that we just haven't had in a long time.
It makes the Ravens a complete team. I mean, even with the issues the Ravens have had running the football, they're still capable. So to have an above average passing game, which I think, I mean, I'm not looking at stats to say we're above average, but I would imagine we're a fairly above average passing game at this point with our receiving core and how well they performed. Mm-hmm. It's very rare. I don't know when you could look back to many other seasons and see as complete as an offense as we're seeing with this Ravens team.
Yeah. Like you said a couple of weeks ago, this thing could be fun. It has been fun. I mean, it's fun to watch offense, you know, because we've almost never done it before. So
never.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from the second Super Bowl year,
mm-hmm.
we had a pretty decent offense at the end of the season and in the playoffs. And then the year when Kubiak was our offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Not many other seasons have we really, you know, we've had standout offensive performers. You know, whether that be the, you know, Jamal Lewis is back in the day or Ray Rice or, you know, name the running backs that have had decent, you know, seasons for the Ravens. Rarely, you know, I guess there were times Bolden was okay as a wide receiver if you're talking like fantasy type numbers.
Right.
You know, but very rarely has there ever been a reason to, you know, get excited about the Ravens offense. And you can legitimately get excited about this passing game, no question about it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's kind of crapshoot. Like, who's it going to be that's going to catch the big pass or catch the touchdown? It really is fun. So, front office deserves a ton of credit. They did a great job this offseason. Shall we flip it over to the defense?
Yeah, let's start slinging more praise at this fantastic unit on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, my goodness. Honestly, they were so good that I don't even really know what to start with. I guess the underlying story for the whole week was the matchup against Dean Pease. And, you know, he was on the other side. He was with the Ravens for so long. Like, can that defense show him that, you know, we can still play without you? I guess that was the mentality going in. And, you know, they were kind of quiet all week, not talking too much. You know, Wink Martindale wasn't saying much, but oh boy, did they show out in a big way.
They truly did. And you know what's funny? I'm not saying there was any animosity towards the players and Pease or anything like that, but, you know, I was never a huge fan of Dean Pease. I don't know. Not that he was a bad defensive coordinator, but I always looked at, you know, you think about the special talent that has come through the defensive coordinator position in Baltimore. And Pease, for me, was, you know, obviously he was the defensive coordinator when we won a Super Bowl, so he's not terrible. But yeah, I never felt like he ever put together one of those defenses that made you go, wow.
Yeah.
And to me, you've basically, I mean, for the most part on defense, correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm not thinking of some huge change, but really the only major change from last year to this year, other than people being healthy, is Wink Martindale and Dean Pease. And yeah. look at how much better this defense is, more consistent. I mean, the fact that through six games, they've still yet to give up a second half touchdown is unbelievable. And it's also approaching a record. I mean, I was listening to, and I've yet to be able to find this stat. I searched for it earlier before the show, and I forget who it was that mentioned it. But this morning on Sirius NFL Radio, I was listening for a little while during my wonderful commute to a place in DC, and they mentioned that the last time there was such a streak of not allowing second half touchdowns, it was like 1935 or something. Yikes. Crazy.
That is.
So we're watching a defense right now that is approaching historic levels of greatness in some respects. You know, maybe we'll have to see when the season's over where they truly stand. But through six games, this defense has been freaking unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. It has been so fun to watch. I mean, production is coming from everywhere. It's not just one guy that's playing well. It is the entire unit that's playing well together. And it is, you know, the Ravens are known for their defense. And for this one to stack up against some of those other all-time great defenses in a league where it's harder to play defense now.
Yeah.
I would love to have command of the English language to describe how I really feel about these guys, because, you know, as soon as we got Mariota uncomfortable yesterday, you could tell, like, he just didn't have it. You know, he was wearing that weird glove. You know, he has that elbow and hand issue or whatever.
Yeah, but that's bad. That's a bad situation. Not to go off on too much of a tangent there, but I feel bad for Titans fans because that's, I mean, I don't know, nerve problems like that sometimes never go away.
Right.
And he was almost a shell of his former self. Not to take anything away from the defensive effort of the Ravens, but Mariota looked awful.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I the Ravens defense had a big part in him looking awful.
Sure, absolutely.
That injury certainly doesn't help. So, you know, a couple things that I gathered here. The Ravens had more sacks than Mariota had completions.
That's unbelievable.
He finished with a QBR of 11.3 on 5 out of the 9 Titans drives. They finished with negative yards. You can look at this whole game and, you know, maybe one play the Ravens defense kind of broke a little bit, and it was the deep ball that Mariota ended up missing anyway. But, I mean, through and through, they were so dominant. You know, Za'Darius Smith, 5 total tackles, 3 sacks, 3.5 of them were for a loss. He had 3 more QB hits that he added. He was everywhere. He was everywhere.
He was awesome. And let me throw out another stat at you. 106 total yards.
Yeah.
106! The last time, or the only other game I guess that I can really compare to, was in that 2000 season against, I believe it was the Bengals. The Ravens only gave up like 93 yards or something, something ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, 106 total yards of offense for the Titans.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Crabtree almost had that much by himself.
Yeah.
You know, the Titans were just putrid on this side of the ball. I mean, they just could not do anything. Derrick Henry never got going. Deion Lewis never got going. Their young receivers never really put too much together. There was no situation in the game where I was thinking, like, oh man, like, here come the Titans. You know, they never got on a roll. You know, when they did, they had some nice plays. They were canceled out by penalties. And, you know, they really...
penalties or sacks. Mm-hmm. I mean, they get a first down, and you're thinking, oh, well, they're probably going to kick a field goal here, mm-hmm. at least. You know, and then two plays later, they've lost 15 yards, and they're punting from the 50. You know, it was unbelievable. I mean, I know I keep saying that over and over, but it truly was an amazing effort on the defensive side of the ball.
Just totally dominant. And I guess the thing that we got to mention is this was against two really good tackles that the Titans have. You know, both first round picks.
Was it nine total sacks coming into the game? I think all season.
Yeah.
I mean, and then the Ravens drop 11.
11 in one game. I mean, Taylor Lewan and Jack Conklin are really good players.
And they had some penalties too during the game. You can see they were starting to get pretty frustrated.
Yeah.
With what was going on.
Yeah, there's nobody on that side of the ball that really strikes fear into you. Once you know, they started racking up the sacks, they just didn't want to be there anymore. It was a long day for them. You know, 11 sacks is so good for the pass rush, and it's looking like that week two absence of the pass rush is the aberration of this defense. You know, they do get after the quarterback. They just happen to not do it that week. But one thing we got to mention is that, you know, with all these sacks, you really got to credit the coverage as well. You know, some of these things were coverage sacks where just Mariota had nowhere to go with the ball.
You're right there. I mean, we've got generally a healthy defensive backfield. I know some of the guys are nicked up a little bit. But with Smith back and you know, everybody playing well, I mean, we'll see. I think we do have a couple guys that might be hurt going into next week, if I read that right. But we'll just have to we'll have to follow that. But anyway, I'm going off on too much of a tangent. The coverage was fantastic yesterday. I mean, the defense as a whole played fantastically. And another point real quick is Kenny Young. You know, I think he continues to play extremely well. He had a great sack where he was sort of hiding behind the defensive line, and then Mariota went to burst from the pocket, and he was right there to take him down. Mm-hmm. You know, I think in some respects, this might sound crazy, but C.J. Mosley's injury may have been a blessing in disguise of some sort for the Ravens, because it gave Kenny Young a chance to play a little bit more and maybe to get some confidence. And with both Young and Owosso, you know, playing pretty well at linebacker in various formations, you know, next to Mosley. And then plus you've got Levine, who can come in and play as that extra DB, you know, sort of hybrid linebacker. And we've got some interesting guys to mix and match in the middle of the field.
Everybody's playing so cohesively. It doesn't really matter who they put out.
Yeah,
everybody can play so many different positions. You know, I wanted to talk about three plays in particular that show how well this defense is playing. One is they were in man coverage. You know, Jimmy Smith was over on the left sideline in man, and then Brandon Carr's guy came up and stacked with Jimmy Smith's wide receiver. And Smith and Carr kind of seamlessly communicated right before the snap, and they switched guys that they were going to cover. They just knew that's what they were going to do. And they snuffed out that stack, which might have confused other less experienced defenses. So that was really cool to see. The other one was an interesting pass rush by Matt Judon. And he lined up on the edge, and he kind of pretended to drop into coverage. And then as soon as Conklin moved back inside to help block somebody else, you know, Judon fired into the gap and, you know, ended up not with the sack himself, but forced, I believe it was Peanut Onwuasa who ended up with the sack. So I thought that was really cool, really creative. And then the last one was a sack by Tony Jefferson. And in that play, he kind of started at the center field spot and Weddle was in the box. And then before the snap, they just switched spots. And maybe Mariota never really registered that that's what they did. But, you know, just that kind of creativity to bring pressure in different ways, you know, switching off man-to-man coverage in really interesting ways like that. I feel like that's just stuff that never really happened with Dean Pease. I mean, we just bring the heat.
You're right. It was a terrific game all the way around. And just to add to your point about Pease and Martindale, you know, I can't agree with you more. I mean, just look at the Super Bowl. Granted, we won that game, and I know the lights went out and all that mess. Mm-hmm. But I forget the exact numbers, but the Ravens are up big. And what happened? The Niners slowly creeped back to the point where it took a goal line stand for the Ravens to win the game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I no disrespect to Dean Pease, but a Ravens defense is a Wink Martindale defense. It's not a Dean Pease defense.
Yeah.
You know, you look back at you know, the Rex Ryan defenses, the Marvin Lewis defenses, and his name's escaping me, Coach Chuck the Colts. Pagano? Thank you. I knew Chuck Pagano. Mm-hmm. He's the other one that just would bring the heat. You know, that's what we need. You know, Pease, I look back and I'm the name's escaping me of that defense too, but the Nolan. Mm-hmm. When Nolan was our defensive coordinator after Lewis, you know, before Rex Ryan took over. Sort of think of that the same way. Now, Nolan was good enough, obviously, to go get a head coaching job. But everybody was like, okay, good, Nolan's gone because we got to keep Rex Ryan. You know, it's like that's almost, at this point, a similar move, you know, getting rid of Pease, not really getting rid of Pease, but having Pease leave and then Martindale take over. I mean, it's you know, and I think we'll have to see how the season progresses with Martindale, but he seems a bit more stable. I don't know if that's the correct phrase, you know, in comparison to like Rex Ryan.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I know what you're trying to say. Rex Ryan was a little bit more emotional of a guy. Martindale seems to be a little bit more in control, and his guys obviously love him. You know, once they set that record with the sacks, you know, they dump the Gatorade on him. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, there's also and some of what I mean by that, too, is, you know, the Rex Ryan defenses, as much as I loved a lot of those players, you were waiting for the dumb thing to happen. You know, you were waiting for Sizzle to have that penalty at the end of the game for doing something dumb or, you know, whoever it is. You know, I don't want to just say it would be Terrell Suggs, but he had his moments. You know, I don't see that happening with this defense. Now, some of that is the veteran leadership on this team is a little bit different, including Terrell Suggs, which is odd to think about that now. But Suggs isn't a guy I would see doing something like that. Now, we do have a player in Judon who I think we've seen a couple different times. I think he might have had a penalty in the game yesterday that was just stupid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's where I think a Rex Ryan defense, that would happen in the last 2 minutes of a game. You know, where the Wink Martindale defense, this is happening. It happens early enough, and everybody says, yo, get your head in the game, whether it's the coaching staff or whether it's, you know, the veteran leaders on the team, and that's a little bit different. So, I don't know. Anyway, just comparing and contrasting, you know, some of the former defensive coordinators. I think Martindale is going to be a good one, though.
Yeah, for sure. So maybe let's talk about the special teams really quick. Cyrus Jones. Not bad, huh?
Not bad at all. I mean, and showed somewhat sure hands in the rain, you know, 26-yard punt return to try to set up some points at the end of the first half. Didn't quite work out. But, you know, he had a good game.
He did. And, you know, the main thing for me was that he just looked comfortable catching it.
Whereas
the previous two guys were maybe a little bit more shaky. I wasn't as confident, but just the way that he got in position and approached the ball, much more comfortable looking. So glad to see that he had a good game. You mentioned his good return. Kicking game, just three extra points for Tucker. Got kind of pushed out of field goal range at the end of the first half there, but his kick from 60 was way short, so might have been out of range already. Sam Cook, again, solid game. You know, he didn't have to do all that much work, to be honest. So special teams did what they had to do, you know, didn't turn the ball over. And with how that defense was playing and how Flacco was throwing the ball, that's kind of all they needed.
You know, one more note on Cyrus Jones. It's interesting. He's wearing, you know, Ray Rice's old number. He almost looked like Ray Rice on the field because he's that strong. You know, that smaller, stocky guy, you know, running the ball. And so I don't know. That struck me as interesting yesterday watching him play. He did remind me a little bit of Ray Rice.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think he's the first person to wear 27 since Rice.
I was going to say, I don't recall anyone else really wearing 27 since Ray Rice.
Yep.
At least anyone of note.
Right. Could have been some practice squad guy.
Or so special teamer.
Yep. So let's get to our segments. Let's start with the game ball. Who are you giving yours to?
Got to go Crabtree. I put him on the bulletin board last week. I mean, coming out strong. I mean, that first drive, as we said, was the Michael Crabtree drive. Had other catches throughout the rest of the game that were big, that moved the chains. You know, that, you know, just snatching that ball for the touchdown. I mean, he came up big with 6 receptions, 93 yards. I mean, he was targeted another 3 times that he wasn't able to convert. I think that's going to be he's not going to catch everything, but he's going to come up big when you need him to, hopefully more often than not.
Yeah, he was terrific, set the tone. Glad to see that he was listening last week. So Michael Crabtree, game ball. I am going to go over to the defensive side, and since everybody played so well, I'm going to go ahead and give it to Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator. You know, put on such a show, bringing that pass rush. The coverage was terrific. Linebackers are really good. So, you know, we talked effusively about them earlier. So Wink Martindale, game ball, you know, did it in front of his former boss and Dean Pease. So that had to feel pretty good as well. Yeah, I mean, such a great performance by that whole defense and by Crabtree. So let's move to our pop of the week. Did you have one in mind?
I do have one in mind, and it's actually more about the pop than the significance of the pop. Zardarius Smith's last sack of the game, the number 11. It was awesome. I don't know. I loved it. It was like a clothesline cross body block of Mariota. Somehow it wasn't roughing the passer. I'll take it. That's my pop of the week.
Yeah, that was a really good one. I noted that one as well. I'm going to go to the special teams. Albert McClellan had a really good tackle on a punt return, I believe. Yeah, I think it was Cook's first punt of the day, and the returner seemed to have a little bit of room there. And I think the Jennings was the Titans returner. He's from Gilman, local Baltimore guy. But Albert McClellan wiped out that return opportunity fairly quickly, and that was my pop of the week.
Yeah, apparently he and Jones both played in the same backfield at one point for Gilman. Not that I'm a Gilman alum or really know anything about Gilman, but I read that earlier today.
Yeah, I mean they
it's pretty cool stuff.
They churn out some athletic talent there, and you know, to get 2 in the same game in the NFL, you know, is really a testament to that.
Pretty special. That's pretty special right there. Yeah, so, there had to be some happy coaches at Gilman watching that happen.
Yeah, good recruiting tool, I guess.
Yeah, true story.
So, I mean, you know, we have so many positive things to say about the Ravens this week, but we still got to put somebody on the bulletin board, you know, give somebody some material. Who are you going with this week?
So mine's not necessarily a negative person on the bulletin board, but I'm putting Gus Edwards up there. Gus, I am ready to say, in Gus we trust. Let's give this young kid the ball and let's see what he can do with it. He ran the ball 10 times on Sunday for 42 yards. Hey, let's do some quick math. 4.2 yards a carry. So that's pretty impressive. Every time he got the ball, he made positive yards. You know, as I think we were talking earlier, we'll see if he's got that extra little bit of shiftiness that maybe Collins and Buck Allen don't necessarily have, or for some reason they're just not feeling it or hitting the hole as quick as they should. But I'll tell you what, this young kid, he looked good in training camp. We cut him, got him on the practice squad. Now he's back on the team. I'd like to see them give this kid more of a shot. So, Gus, don't make me look bad. Let's play well next week.
For sure. I mean, imagine any other team where a guy comes up from the practice squad and touches the ball 10 times. I don't think that kind of thing happens.
No. I mean, right away. It's not like they eased him in or anything. I mean, boom, he's in the game. We're giving him the ball. I mean, he must have impressed some people in training camp for them to trust him that much. And that leads me to believe a couple things. A, that they trust him. They feel pretty confident. We're going to give this kid the ball. He's not going to fumble it. He's at least going to hit the hole. You know, but it also makes me look at Collins and you think at the end of the game, they weren't giving the ball to Alex Collins. They were giving him the ball to a rookie free agent for Rutgers who had just been signed from the practice squad earlier in the week. Yeah.
The other thing to mention that maybe we forgot a little bit was that Buck Allen only had 4 touches all game. So maybe Edwards is starting to get a little bit more of that trust. You know, they like what they see out of him. So we'll see. I mean, definitely could sees a bigger role for himself, so he is on our bulletin board. I am going to stick on the offense, and I'm going to stick with another young player. First round pick, Hayden Hurst. I get that he was hurt. I get that he's still getting used to the speed of the game, that he's a little bit rusty. But he's the first round pick, man. Like, he was picked before Lamar Jackson. He's got to start making an impact at some point. And the leaky Saints defense is the perfect time to do it. You know, he's got to get on the same page as Joe Flacco. You know, he was only targeted once in the passing game, and that was an incompletion. He got that one weird carry that we mentioned, but, you know, that's not really his strength. He's got to become part of this offense. He's got to join Mandrews and be that, you know, seam extender down the middle of the field, that third down kind of safety blanket along with Willie Snead and Michael Crabtree, and just make it impossible to defend this passing offense. You know, we're not getting all of what we want out of the running game. That means we're going to have to lean a little bit harder on these shorter and intermediate routes, and that's what Hayden Hurst's game is. The sooner he can show up, the better this offense gets. So he's my bulletin board material guy of the week. So Gus sees a bigger role. Hayden, you got to get there, man. Do this thing for us. So now, like I mentioned before, we're going to have a modified version of Take It Inside the Bank. Our friend of the program and fellow BSR correspondent, Mike Long, was in Nashville in Nissan Stadium to take in this game. So let's go to him and talk about his experience in the stadium. All right, like I mentioned, here is Mike Long, our resident recurring guest to Crab Takes in Football. He was down in Nashville for a few days and got to head to the Nissan Stadium to take in the Ravens' win. Mike, you all settled back in Baltimore?
Yeah, we made it in about midday yesterday. Just got to get back right into the work grind, but we're all back in Baltimore. Ready for this Sunday, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to hear it. So let me get your take on how the game was. I know last week Holly and I mentioned how intense the Ravens-Titans rivalry used to be. And I was just wondering, I mean, is there anything still to that? Or is that kind of a thing with the past that just went with the division realignment?
Aside from a few Eddie George jerseys rolling around town, there's not much left to that rivalry, at least in the stadium. It did not feel that way. I don't know, again, if the weather had anything to do with that, but or if it was just us going right down the field and scoring on that opening drive, but the life was just sucked out of that place. Not a lot of crowd noise coming from the Titans side. You know, a lot of purple down there, that's for sure. But just, it was a very, very, very unique NFL experience just because of how much control, I guess, the visiting team took over like right away.
Yeah, I guess that's what you look to do when you're on the road, you know, take the crowd out of it early and jump on top and the defense takes over. And I know, so you were at the game last year too, I mean, and you seem to think that it was quite a different experience this time around.
Yeah, again, it might have just been the way we were playing. I mean, we just blew their doors off this time around. And then we had a little bit of a rainy afternoon, but I noticed even more purple in the crowd. You know, there were a ton of Ravens fans down there, and it may have even been louder when the Ravens were on defense on third down than it was when the Titans were trying to shut us down. But it was a really unique experience. It was more like a college game than NFL, at least what I was kind of used to. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely a different experience this time around.
That's interesting. I mean, it had to be the game flow and the rain and all that.
Yeah,
you know,
kind of a perfect storm, I bet. Yep. Yeah.
So give me a quick review of the stadium in general and maybe compare it a little bit to M&T Bank.
Ooh. Okay, so Nissan Stadium is not up to par with M&T.
Yikes.
So last year we sat kind of in the end zone area, which was cool because it's kind of like an open end zone. It's kind of more of an open concourse feel, more like Nationals Park than Camden Yards. And, you know, sitting down there was nice. It's kind of nice that it's open concourse. But we sat upstairs this time, and it was very Bird Stadium-like. You know, a lot of steep ramps, a lot of steep stairwells. If you ever go to Nissan Stadium, don't walk down the ramps because that will lead you straight outside. You can't go back in. So we had to go all the way back up to go back down. We were trying to take a picture with all the Ravens coming off the field. But, I mean, overall, I'd give it, like, a C, kind of like an average stadium. It looks like it's getting a little bit older, but the location is awesome. You walk like right over a pedestrian bridge, which gets you right down to like Broadway, which are where all the bars and kind of like the nightlife scene is, which was taken over by all the Ravens fans after the game, which was pretty awesome. But location, you can't beat it. But as far as the stadium, you know, not the most glowing review from me.
Yeah, but the stadium versus the city. I know you love it down in Nashville. We've been down there together, and we've had a terrific time. You want to give Nashville a little sales pitch for the people that haven't been down there yet?
Unbelievable time. Just the nicest people you'll ever meet. And then just the whole downtown scene. It can get to be like a little bit much at some times, but
yes, that's
certainly
for sure.
It's a fun trip, especially, you know, if you can pair it up with a Ravens game or whatever else down there. You know, we went to the Predators game on Saturday night, which was absolutely awesome. So there's a good trip for sure. It came home with a W, which made it even better.
Oh yeah, that always helps. So you just mentioned to me that you're not going to be able to go to the Saints game, but do you have any thoughts on it going in?
You know, I'm excited to see us go up against their offense. That's two juggernauts going up against each other.
Sure.
With our defense coming off that 11 sack game, so something's got to give. Hopefully we can keep it close and our offense can show up again and get the points where they need to. But I'm excited for it. It should be a good one for sure.
Yeah, that's bound to be a good one. That's the matchup that Holly and I are going to talk about on the latter part of the podcast as well. So, you know, we might have to find a new correspondent for this game, but we'll catch back up with you next time.
Sounds good, man.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Yep. See you.
Thank you again to Mike for joining us. He'll be coming back after Week 7 against the Saints. So let's jump right in and talk about that matchup as the Ravens finally return home to host a New Orleans Saints team that is pretty good. So Holly and I had some terrific content already put together, and being a podcast and still our infancy stages, of course, I accidentally deleted that, so I'm just going to do a quick recap of our preview and predictions for the game. Holly, I'm sorry, man, but I will get your thoughts in here. He had some wild takes, so I'm going to be sure to mention those. The Saints, like I said, are a really good team. You know, they have one of the most potent offenses in the league, led obviously by Drew Brees, and he's got fantastic weapons in Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, and Mark Ingram. You know, Sean Payton's always seems to be in control of that offense. And the thing that we really need to watch out for is that they're coming off of a bye. And Sean Payton and Drew Brees coming off of a bye is never really a good thing ever. So the Ravens defense really has to be ready to go. They got to be locked in. Because who knows what these guys have up their sleeve. The thing that does work in the Ravens' favor is that we're back home now. And the Ravens, you know, got out of that three-game stretch on the road with a 2-1 record, which is a fantastic place to be. But they are a different team at home. They play much better at home in front of the Ravens fans. So I think that might kind of even things out a little bit. Like I said, Saints offense, a lot of potential for a lot of points that they can put up, but the defense has been playing so well, they've been playing so seamlessly that it's got to be a really good matchup going into it. So It's going to be a really good one to see. On the defensive side, the Saints kind of have some issues. You know, they do defend the run really well, but against the pass, they are certainly very susceptible. Joe Flacco at home always plays better, you know, kind of kicks things into a different gear against the better teams, especially at home. Like we mentioned earlier in the show, lots of different weapons for him to go to. The running game might struggle again, but like we said, kind of those short intermediate passes might be the way to go to control the clock and really just kind of slowly move the ball down the field. And that's what the Saints do. I mean, they even on their offense, they're not really taking the deep strikes like they used to with, you know, guys like Marcus Colston. But now they kind of, you know, short intermediate routes, get their guys up in some open space and let them make plays. So here, let's get to our predictions now. With all that being said, the Saints are favored by 2.5 points with the early line here. And I found that kind of surprising. You know, Holly found that a little bit surprising too, especially because of how well the Ravens have been playing and how well they play at home. You know, it's surprising to see a team come in favored against the Ravens in Baltimore. So Holly thinks we're going to win. So he's looking at a 33-30 game, and, you know, high scoring. You know, the defense might get gassed a little bit, finally give up a touchdown in the second half, but he thinks that they are going to score a touchdown of their own to counteract that. So, you know, that'll be huge. I mean, if we can get any kind of production out of the special teams and defense, that'll be terrific. His bulletin board material guy, Gus Edwards, huge otherworldly expectations for Gus Edwards this week. He's looking at 200 yards and 2 touchdowns. He's looking for Todd Gurley numbers out of Gus Edwards. So, you know, if Holly's your guy and you trust him, go get Gus Edwards on your fantasy team because he's about to put up the game of his life. The other guy that Holly wants to make sure that we watch out for is Willie Snead. And you got to remember, Willie Snead came from the Saints. And, you know, he kind of fell out of favor with them, lost a lot of playing time. And he vowed in the offseason that no matter where he ended up, he would make the Saints pay. Holly seems to be along on that kind of same page with Snead. He's looking for 2 more touchdowns from Snead. So, you know, those two guys look like the guys that's going to be the carry of the offense as far as Holly goes. If that's truly the case, that would be absolutely incredible. You know, Gus Edwards might be the revelation of this, you know, rookie class. You know, forget Lamar Jackson and Hayden Hurst and Kenny Young. Gus Edwards might be the next star. So I kind of have a similar feeling. I think the Ravens are going to win 35-28. You know, Flacco is going to be able to take advantage of that leaky Saints secondary. You know, we might have some issues running the ball, but, you know, the game against the Titans showed that, you know, with a little bit of commitment to it, even though you're not really getting much, that opens up the passing game. Flacco can make all the throws. He's at home. I was on board with September Joe Flacco before. He's going to roll it right over into October Joe Flacco. The defense is going to struggle a little bit, you know, but I do think we match up pretty well, especially with a guy like Michael Thomas. You're never going to shut a guy like him down. But we do have Jimmy Smith, Marlon Humphrey, and Brandon Carr that we can throw at him and give him some different looks. Kamara might be a problem. You know, he's another back that catches the ball a lot out of the backfield. That seems to give us some issues sometimes. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, you know, there's really no definitive way to give you a game script, but I do think the Ravens are going to stay hot. And they're going to win again. They're going to move to 5-2 and show that, you know, they should never really be underdogs at home. So I'm sorry that the fun way that we did this got deleted. You know, I'll have some improvements coming for our next episode to make sure that doesn't happen. But thank you guys for joining us for week 6, episode 6 of Crab Takes in Football. We'll talk to you next time.